Mother Earth. Thank you for all your abundant gifts. Good morning, Father Sun. Thank you for feeding all living things on Earth. Thank you, Plant Kingdom. Thank you, trees and plants, for converting the sun's light into edible foods that we can consume and digest, and for providing oxygen in the air that we breathe. Good morning, water. Thank you for being 75% of our body. We are one, and we bless you and protect you because we cannot live without you. Good morning, animal kingdoms. Thank you for your companionship, your beauty and splendor,
ancestors,
and for your sacrifice of life so that we may eat and live. Thank you, great spirit that moves in all things. Thank you for our lives and for the opportunity to be here and to be of service in this sacred earth garden of life. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Good morning and hello, this is Caroline Wise King. Welcome to Shaman's Keep. Today we have the wonderful Susan Grimaldi joining us again. She's a Native American Choctaw shaman who has also produced documentaries of shaman in China and Mongolia. She was on our show December 7th. If you missed that show, I would urge you at some time that's convenient for you to go to the archives and listen to that show, because we covered some amazing stories that she had of traveling in China and Mongolia and just amazing experiences. Now today, as she joins us, we're going to be talking more about healing practices, and she'll be sharing some of her wisdom and insights from her 35 years of healing practice. And encompasses more than 10,000 healings. So this is a wonderful opportunity for all our listeners to hear right from the mouth of a true shaman the reality of spiritual healing. Okay, so Susan, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Caroline, for asking me to be back on your show.
Well, it's wonderful to have you. You have such a vast range of experience. And I'm curious, though, what's been happening with you since you were on the show in December? I think you were still working on some videos or documentaries.
I was on the West Coast recently with my partner, John Lawrence, and we were showing our video in San Diego, our two videos, and also Whidbey Island in Washington State outside of Seattle and in Seattle. And we raised some money showing them so we could get a final edit for the Tsaten video. And we got a very warm reception and it generated quite a lot of excitement, and people had a lot of interesting questions for us, and we enjoyed it a lot.
Would you explain to our listeners who the Tsaten are?
They are nomadic reindeer herders living in the northern part of Mongolia along the Siberian frontier in the east and the west taigas. There are 400 of these Tsaten people remaining in the world, and they're nomadic, and they had a lot to teach us about nomadic lifestyle, sustainable living, and they have shamans that are traditional that go back for thousands of years, these practices, and we were able to film them and question them and interview them and learn a lot, and we discovered some very original research material.
That's fascinating. I had heard about them from another source. I don't know if you've heard of the Horse Boy video, but there is a family in Texas with a small child with autism, and nothing. He had severe autism, constant screaming and crying, and could not be trained to go to the bathroom, could not be helped in any way. And they had heard about the reindeer people and the shamans there. And so they traveled to Mongolia and traveled in a van for a long time and then on horseback for a long time to get to these people. And they videotaped everything and made this video called The Horse Boy. And of course, the shaman there did help the child tremendously. And so I don't know if you've heard of that video or seen it, but it was just awesome to see this actually happening and verifying that help is available for autism and things like that.
Yes, I did see the video and actually met with that shaman that did that healing for the young boy, and his name is Gusta, and he's Tsaten from the West Taiga, and this was the same band that we met, and he, in fact, trained the other shaman that we filmed this last trip named Gambat, and he was Gambat's teacher, and they do get really good results from their repairment, and it was an amazing video, and the book is also incredible. I don't know if you've had a chance to read the book, but it goes into more detail than the video did on the actual practices that the shamans were doing, and it goes into more understanding of what the shamans saw and why the outcome was so significant.
Oh, okay. I haven't read the book, so I will look at that, because it showed him on the video just pulling this stuff like from the crown of the boy's head and pulling it down his back, and like he was removing something, and so it was awesome to see that little bit.
What was the basic understanding was that the mother of this child had a grandmother or that had lost a male child when she was younger, and then the shaman saw this without any foreknowledge of this and felt that it was this grandmother of the mother of the child that was pulling on the soul of the boy, and he needed to sever that cord that was dragging that boy. The boy had drowned in another time in history, and this woman that had been deceased was trying to pull this child over into her realm, and that's what the shaman saw. And so in order to repair the balance, he was able to disentangle that connection.
Okay, that's pretty amazing, and it's something probably a lot of our listeners are not aware of, that there can be a spirit intervention happening on the other from the other side that is affecting people's lives. I think in our culture, people don't even acknowledge that there are spirits around us, or that there are spirits that may have some desire of their own that are, you know, affecting our lives.
When a deceased person's soul hooks into a living person, it can make people sick. And it's important to send back the soul. So often the shaman will take some piece of clothing from that deceased person, and they use those clothes to attract the soul. And then these clothes will be placed outside on a mountain, and then the shaman will blow juniper smoke on these clothes, making a road for that soul to leave the living person's body and leave this middle world and move on into the light. And that's a form of healing that the shamans in Mongolia do practice. This band of Tsaten, and it's called depossession. I've seen depossession practice in other parts of the world as well.
Well, we also here in the United States run into some of that in our healing work. How do you handle it when you're working with someone that has a spirit attachment like that?
I find that this is a very compassionate form of engagement, because I work with primarily with the deceased in circumstances like this, because it's the deceased that needs the help, because they're stuck in a place that they're not settled, that they're unresolved in their own death. And so this involves counseling for the deceased in order to help them to know that they're dead. Sometimes they died very instantly and they weren't prepared, and they may not even realize that they're dead. And so they may be wandering around without really understanding what happened. And so I would meet with that soul initially and get a sense of connection and how to establish trust, and then explain to them that there is a place that I can show them and take them where they can be at peace. And then we talk it over, and again, it varies from situation to situation. But what I'm hoping for is that some way I can help that person to feel ready to make that transition toward the light and be free from the wanderings of this realm. And I also would be working with the patient in the middle world here, the living person, and I would work to help them by severing the cords to this deceased spirit. And I would use what's called a spiritual pass, which is like a chopping, very quick. It's kind of reminds me of like karate moves or something, that kind of thing, where things are cleared out. And then I would help them to establish a place in the universe that is theirs without any entanglements. And then I would work from there then to make repairment to whatever disturbance has resulted in this entanglement with this deceased soul. And sometimes they need to be filled back with their own power and to remember who they are without this drawing from their vitality. And so I would work with vision to restore them to wholeness and to help them to be free of that drain. And so it's similar to extraction healing in that way, but it also has this whole other dimension of working with the deceased as well.
I'm glad you mentioned cutting the cords, because I had, you know, we all encountered some of this, and I had in the past primarily asked my teacher in the upper world to help that spirit to move on and to give it over into my teacher's care, and my teacher would take it into the upper worlds and connect it with its loved ones on the other side and things like that. And then I encountered some situations where the spirit kept coming back. And I'm like, okay, what is holding this spirit here? And what I was shown was just amazing. It seems that sometimes a person that is dying, if they have a long lingering illness, they become corded, the cord forms to the illness itself, to the experience of the illness, where they were so constantly thinking about the next medication, the next test that had to be done, the next trip to the doctor's office, and the pain, and what should they do next. Their whole lives had become so involved in this ritual of medication and doctor visits and constant pain and fright, because they're often just terrified about what's happening to their body. But they can form a cord actually to the disease itself, to the experience of the disease. Maybe I should put it that way. And in a couple of instances, I found that that was the case, and I had to sever that cord and set them free from, free them from the illness, the experience of that illness, so that they could go on in a whole way, you know. So it's amazing how much we learn from these journeys that we do, because that thought had never even occurred to me that something like that could happen.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense, where a person has in some way have been stuck or connected in some way to this world. And that's one way, it sounds like, that could be really problematic.
Yes, and so that's another cord that sometimes we need to sever. It isn't just cords of attachment to the people they've loved or you know, things like that. It can actually be to the experience of a long lingering kind of painful disease.
Right. So they may identify with that as themselves and forget that they're beyond that, something greater.
Yes, exactly. And so cutting that cord allows them to remember that they are whole, divine, beautiful spirit beings, and they can move on without any of that lingering effect of a long death process.
Mm-hmm. That trauma, really.
Mm-hmm, yes, it does create such a trauma for them. So I'm curious about, because I seem to be running into more and more children with autism, parents with children with autism that are just at their wits' end to know what to do and how to handle this. Have you had some experiences in working with children with autism?
I have. I have had in my career 3 autistic children I've worked with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a difficult situation because I don't think all autism is the same, and so what could be the cause of one type of autism may be very different from another, and so in terms of the outcome, it really can vary, and the approach as well.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if there's been brain damage from, say, the cord wrapped around the infant's neck during birth, then the brain has been damaged due to lack of oxygen, they may still be diagnosed with autism. Mm-hmm. And then there could be some other reason that another child gets diagnosed with autism that wouldn't have that same kind of impact on their physical brain, although they still would be acting in similar ways. And
mm-hmm.
so some things are, I think, respond better than the others. And I think in terms of the outcome, I think all healing basically is encompassing the place of love. And so there's a kind of beauty and grace that is experienced when the healing that holds the space for that which is greater to come through and to touch that person in whatever way they can be helped. And so healing can be defined in different ways. It doesn't mm-hmm. necessarily mean that the symptoms go away, but it may be that there's a kind of development that helps that person become more comfortable with who they are or their circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And so the person may still be autistic, but they may have more equanimity or more capacity to focus or find that they're having the courage and the strength to be able to overcome and come up with new approaches and find their own way based on their own configuration, so they find a combination that works. I know for the young boy in horse boy, I think his name was Rowan, I'm not sure about that, mm-hmm. but he found that if he was near this horse, that he could love and feel this connection with the heart of the life of this other being. And that was a saving grace for his understanding of existence. And
mm-hmm.
and then when he went to the shaman, I think that in Mongolia, the shaman was able to connect with him in a similar way, where he went past the difficulties that the boy was having and to the seed, the actual essence of that being, and find the light there and then bring something that greatly imbued him with the extra capacity then to find his way past some of the obstacles that he was facing, like toilet issues and things like
mm-hmm.
that. And I think that's what promoted the change, was that touch the shaman's soul with intention and that boy's essence.
Yes, I know there's not one set answer to any of the healings, whether it's autism or cancer or mental depressions, things like that. Everybody is different and affected by different circumstances and issues in their lives. But it's heartening to know that there has been some improvement for children with autism through this kind of healing, and that it has enhanced their life experience, has made it much better. So that's good. Tell me, with your practice, because you've said you've done over 10,000 healings in 35 years, and oh my goodness, you must have experienced just about every kind of problem people can have. What would you say here in the United States is the most prevalent reason, thing that is affecting people that they need help with?
Well, I think essentially, no matter what the symptoms are, if they're physical symptoms, the common factor that I seem to be focused on continually is the disruption of the soul in the person, that they're unsettled, that they're disturbed by some past trauma or unresolved emotional conflict or some kind of damage that occurred to their soul. And that will be important to resolve, because when that level of disturbance is so essential, it affects every part of the person, their emotions and their physical body. And so my approach is to focus on the repairing the soul, removing what doesn't belong there in the spiritual plane, and then restoring their soul to wholeness and reweaving their soul outside of time to comfort them in those traumatic times or those times of disturbance, so they can find themselves or remember themselves in a very direct way, a sense of themselves without all that pain. And who are they then in this place free of that? Then they can discover with innocence who they truly are. And in that way, I am in a place that I can then bring the healing to reflect into their emotions and into their physical symptoms. And so the relief can be very profound if we can get the soul to be comfortable and content. Then the emotions and how one deals with stress and difficulties and conflicts, there can be more stability during those times of difficulty, where then and what the choices they make and how they live their lives can result in healthier bodies and more comfortable relationships.
When you talk about reweaving the soul in the spirit world, what exactly do you mean by that?
What I find is during the healing, if the intrusions are removed and the soul is placed back, I can use that essence that's them, and wherever there's been a rip or a tear or a hole or some anguish that has been a place of hurt, where they've pivoted and all their life has been really thwarted in a way because they've been trying to figure that thing out. If we can clear that all out and then bring outside of time, I'll give you an example. I'm going to make this up, but let's say the person had gotten hit by a car crossing the street when they were 8, and they flew out and they were sitting in a tree. Their soul flew out, and they watched themselves being rescued, and then they didn't ever come back, and so they've had a loss of soul. If I during the healing was able to bring the soul back, then I could go back in that moment of fear and trauma when that moment happened and speak to their soul. And while I'm speaking to their soul, assure them that that's over, they're okay, and sing back their beauty where that strain and tension of the event then will leave their soul. And they'll truly then find they're no longer plagued by that fear, however it's been showing up in their life. So it's outside of time. We go back in the moment, and they're usually not, it's not cathartic. They don't usually have to relive it. The person I'm working with will often go into a reverie where they will be suspended, and they won't be having any suffering. They usually kind of look like they've fallen asleep. And it's that unconscious state then that I have the freedom to handle all these painful events and mend them and reweave them. So then their fabric looks pure and beautiful like when they came into the world.
Oh, that's a wonderful way of expressing it. You know, I think that's one of the things that we all seem to be working on is a soul retrieval, because especially in our society, people have all kinds of traumatic things that have happened to them, and their physical body was treated for the breaks or tears or damages to the body, but in our society, they often were not treated for the emotional and mental trauma and everything that happened. And of course, you and I know that often a part of that person jumps out, literally leaves them, at the part that says, I can't handle this, I don't want to be a part of it, I'm out of here. And the part doesn't usually come back on its own, so we do have to help it come back, and in a whole healthy way, without any of the trauma and everything. I've heard that in tribal societies, everybody understood that if something traumatic had happened to them, they needed to go to the shaman, the tribal shaman, and have some work done. And of course, in our society, we don't do that. So what we're dealing with, or what I find I'm dealing with most of the time, is people that have several instances in their life where they've suffered some kind of trauma, and this part of their spirit was never healed from it. And so it's multiple, and like it's built up in them, so that they have several issues that all could have been resolved at the time the traumas happened if we had known that how to do that, or known what they needed to have done for them.
I think our society is now catching up with the idea that this resource is available and that people can get help more and keep more current and in terms of these ongoing traumas. Because, like you're saying, it's compound now, and it's more complicated when there's been a lifetime of untreated soul impact that's damaged the beautiful essence.
Exactly. It's just they've got layers and layers of repair work that needs to be done sometimes. And
but when you're working with these great sources of power in nature, what looks like this very big and long history of difficulties that have left impact, it can be this great power that it can be conveyed, and all this beauty and healing can happen in very short amount of linear time. Once we approach it, it's certainly a very wonderful resource when working with these great potentials.
Yes, it's amazing, because there are these compassionate beings that are available in the spirit world to help us and to do healings and to work with all sorts of situations. I mean, it's so wonderful that they choose to help us here on Earth and to make their powers available for healing. I try to stress to people that, you know, I don't do anything. I'm just a facilitator. It just, thank heavens, I have some wonderful healing spirits that work through me, and they actually do all of this. And it's wonderful that that is available to us, and it has been shut out. It's been hidden. It's been stamped out in so many places that people have lost the remembrance that, yes, we're surrounded by helping, loving, compassionate spirits.
It's wonderful that it's being reclaimed by humanity in a broad way throughout the world now.
Yes, and it's happening very quickly. It's like what happened with you in China the first time you went, and it was forbidden, and you had to do everything in secret. And then, like in a course of, 10 or 15 years, there was a complete turnaround.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's amazing that it is happening so rapidly now.
I think it's a testimony to our need and our nature as human beings that this is a gift and it is possible, and somehow because it works and we need it, then it's coming back very quickly. And I think that's one of the indicators that we do need it, and it is available.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Now, you talked about how they do extraction work in Mongolia and China and all. How do you do extraction work here in the United States?
I'm very straightforward about it. I put the person, first I initially do a divination to mm-hmm. anticipate what is expected. I like to see the healing before it happens so I know how to prepare. And then, generally speaking, the person's lying on the massage table, fully clothed, and I make sure that I'm centered, and I call in the help that I need, and understand that there's a source for me that empowers, that comes through, and I align myself with that, merge with that. And then I approach the person with no fear whatsoever, and then I put my hands and I follow the guidance, and then I feel it, and I take it out, and I can hear it. Actually, it makes an audible sound when this debris and all that comes with it is released. There's a clicking and an audible sound, and I can feel it. I just gather it up by the handful, and I send it to the water. Mm-hmm. And I often will combine where I'll be repairing the soul at the same time, and it may be that I'll go back and forth. And one of the reasons I do that is because sometimes there's so much soul loss, then the person's had so much intrusive energy that has offset that emptiness, that if I were to take everything out and then wait for another session, I don't feel a need for that. I just go ahead and bring the soul essence back, and I just juxtapose it. And I'm working with guidance, so I'm understanding as I go. It's like a dance with a partner, and I'm being led. And so I'll be flicking something away, and then in turn, at some point, I may blow into them. And then I may start to reweave outside of time, and I'll see this history and where they had this event, and then I'll soothe their soul and remind them that they're okay now, they're back intact, and they'll settle down, and they'll start to then know themselves in a new way. And it's extraordinarily beautiful. And oftentimes the person will then come out of that and they'll feel lighter, and they'll maybe laughing mm-hmm. and they'll be smiling, whereas before they were tense and dark and vacant, maybe, mm-hmm. Maybe anxious. And so there's visible change right mm-hmm. away that's experienced.
Yes, isn't that the most wonderful thing? I have seen people lay down on my blanket, because I don't use a massage table. I spread it's like an Indian blanket on the ground or the floor, and they lay on that, and I have seen them lay down looking, like dead people, you know, pale, no light in their eyes, and very, just not well, not happy, and not, like I said, almost dead. I see them lay down like that, and I've seen them get up, and their eyes are full of light, and they're smiling, and they're joyful, and it's just amazing to see that transformation. It's just never stops thrilling my soul when I see that.
It is a wonderful feeling to see people respond and get better, and I wanted to say, I was living in Grenada for a little while one winter, and this was when my son was three, so it's been about 23 years ago, and I had an opportunity. I was invited to a ceremony down there where they were mashing out the illness, which is a different technique. They would squeeze it out, so I've seen that. I've also in my travels seen them doing sucking, where they'll suck out the illness. In fact, in Mongolia, we had heard that there had been the technique of sucking for removing an intrusion, but we were told that no one that they know of among the Tsotans still practice that now. And so things do change. I've seen in the Sami tradition that they'll use their hands to pull things out. So there are different techniques around the world, but it all has the same intention, which is to remove anything that isn't of the person's true essence.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, I need to back up because I asked you about extractions and I didn't explain to our listeners what an extraction is about, and I probably should tell them that in shamanism, we feel that anytime there's a localized illness of some kind or disease, that there's what we call an intrusion that has entered the body at that place and is drawing on the energy of the person. And over a period of time, it can cause damages to the body, which eventually can result in some serious diseases. And so extraction work is a method of pulling out those intrusions so that the body can heal itself. And our bodies are wonderful, amazing things that our bodies can heal themselves from almost anything if they're given half a chance. If we take out, say, the thorn that is festering and causing the problem in the body, and the body kicks in and heals itself, that's what doing an extraction does. It mm-hmm. takes out the thing that's causing the problem, and the body repairs itself.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Would you?
Healing is just amazing of all kinds. I just look at nature in general and see that creation as we as a seed burgeons forth and grows and their offspring and all this creation, and of course there's death and there's this fecundity of this teeming life. All that that is creation is what is a part of healing. We're changing in these ways where we can repair and manifest this repairing that brings us longevity, and our bodies keep on changing as we age because we keep on growing, but we're adapting to the new circumstances. The mystery of healing and the force of the feeling of the capacity for us to do that, I think, is one of the most exciting aspects of being alive.
Oh, it is. But we can see that in nature, too. I have a tree that some of the limbs were damaged. A few years ago, there was a snowstorm that we don't normally get snow in this area, and the weight of the snow caused some of the limbs to crack, not across where the limb would break off, but in in the fabric of the limb itself, it just split in middle like it. And so there were these big openings. And I was thinking, oh, you know, I probably am going to have someone come in and just cut all those limbs out. And a friend of mine said, well, you know, there's a chance that the tree can just heal itself. And why don't you, you know, give it a chance to do that? And so I did. And the splits are still there. But the tree somehow healed itself. There's never been an invasion of any kind of disease in those broken areas. The limb is still fully alive and blooming in the spring and doing everything like normally. So we see, you know, how nature repairs itself and heals itself. And we have to understand that our bodies are also capable of healing some amazing, you know, damages to the body. And this shamanism is a way of helping enhance those healing abilities of the body. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yes, because we can, as practitioners, help to hold that creative potential that surrounds us. All this creation is everywhere, and we can open that veil and be the conduit for all that healing energy, then to accelerate the mending and to resolve the irritants and to soothe the soul and repair all that has been underlying the illness and bring the person back to their balance and their grace and their beauty. And then they're free to begin their life without that pain. And then who are they? And they can know themselves afresh. And it's just amazing to be relieved of that burden of suffering, mm-hmm. and to have another chance.
Yes, and to experience another spring where the body resurrects again from what seemed like death and the death of winter. Sometimes that's how illnesses affect people. They feel that they're going through a winter in their lives. And so it's wonderful to see the body renewing itself. And we know that that's possible. One thing I would like to touch on is the fact that having intrusions come into the body is usually the result of traumas that people have experienced and lost parts of their soul. And when the soul leaves, it leaves a hole in the auric field, which is an invitation to something else to come in and make a home there. And this is something people don't realize, that if they have had a number of traumatic experiences in their lives, they may have opened themselves to the possibility of something that would actually develop into a disease in the body itself later.
The way I understand my experience shows me that when there has been this kind of trauma or disruption and there's a tear or a lacking of soul essence, that the person then is out of balance. They're afraid. They don't want to be hurt again. They're tense, and that fear can then, and that imbalance can then lead them to not wanting to participate or being afraid of rejection or of painful experiences. And then their life gets on a different trajectory where they're holding back and there's obstruction, and then things start to happen as a result of that. Then they feel like they're not loved, and they that there's something wrong with them, and they hate themselves, and they're guilty, and they think no one likes them because they're bad. And these things snowball until they have this whole illusion of who they are based on this pain, and that's how they define themselves. And that is, in my mind, what the intrusive quality is their life then has, because they have had loss in their soul, they're out of balance, and then they begin to live in such a way that these negative aspects begin to be fostered, and then they are fed, and they grow bigger, and worse things can come, and pretty soon they can have illness. And so to remove all that debris, all that outlook, that perspective, that illusion of who they are, you know, feeling that they're unlovable or that they're not worthy or mm-hmm. all these things that we feel as human beings. If we can clear that, then that's a beginning of the healing. And then if we can get the soul back in, then they have all this potential that they had lost back intact. And so all of a sudden they may have their courage to try something before they were afraid to try because they didn't want to get rejected or hurt. Now all of a sudden they're wide-eyed and willing to find out whether they can trust themselves or trust another person or navigate a difficult circumstance and still be okay. And so they grow stronger.
Yes, that is so true, because those negative belief systems, I found that we do have to work with their belief systems that they have formed. Sometimes as small children, something has happened that has caused them to form some core belief that still is operating in their lives, even though they've grown up and whatever the incident was that happened when they were a child. For instance, a child that, say a little boy who's spilled his glass of milk on the coffee table where his father had some important papers, and it got on the papers and the milk spilled over onto the carpet and made a mess, and the father was just so angry, and he yelled at him and he said, you just can't do anything right, can you? And, you know, you're just nothing but trouble. And just get out of here. I don't want to see you. And, you know, was very angry with the child. Well, the child may have formed a belief system at that time that he wasn't good enough to be loved, that he truly couldn't do anything right, and that he was just bad, or that, you know, and even though as an adult he might remember that and look back on it and understand that it was just an accident, he still has that core belief system in his subconscious that it may be causing him to still react in ways that say, I'm not good enough, or I can't do anything right.
Mm-hmm. And the sense of shame might inhibit him from trying things that because he doesn't want to feel, you know, he's made a mistake.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I find that we have to find out where they formed some belief system that's holding them back. And maybe he suffered a little soul loss at that instance when his father was so angry with him. We need to bring that back. And we need to clear up that a belief system that really is no longer viable in his life, because spilling a glass of milk is just an accident. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't say anything about you, what kind of person you are, what you're capable of doing with your life and things like that. So there's so much involved in healing to completely, as you say, reweave the person's soul so that they can be all that they came here to be.
I am working in my office today, and I had a moment where I was aware that we have the opportunity to feed our souls. We can do that, and we can do it intentionally, and this inspires and lifts us with light, and we feed our, you know, bodies, and that we're not thinking about how to feed our souls, and there is, of course, we're surrounded by the miracle of life and the beauty in nature, and that's a source. There's also art that can lift us up and bring us rich, imbued ways of being in the world where we feel energized. We can work with intention to seek the source of our rejuvenation intentionally by taking time to do a journey to the fountain of our being and the drink from that can feed us and nurture our soul directly. And there are probably other ways I'm not thinking of at the moment. That maybe dreaming is another way that will feed our souls and help us to maintain balance. There's probably some other things that I haven't thought of yet in terms of emotional content about being forgiving or having insights and reconciliations and being freed from some misgivings. Those are probably ways that nurture our soul as well, because we're clearing away, you know, changing attitudes and clearing away obstructions that prevent us from fullness.
Oh, yes, you're so right. And I believe doing something creative with our hands, whether it's painting a picture or sculpturing or even planting a garden. But if we do something creative, it pulls the life force energy, which is a creative energy, into us and helps the healing process to actually come full bloom. And so, yes, exactly what you're saying. It feeds the spirit.
And I think cultivating these experiences that bring satisfaction and gratification by fulfilling our passions and knowing what it is that is unique to us that we can do that we enjoy. Mm-hmm. And it may be painting or dancing or talking or walking. And then when we have this welling up of excitement and being alive, I think that's a good indication that we're nurturing in a sustainable way our life force, which may be a real key.
Yes.
To health and maybe even ultimately our longevity.
Yes. Susan, we are out of time. I've enjoyed this so much. Thank you for joining us again. And I just wish you many blessings and all that your work and all the wonderful things you're doing. Thank you.
And thanks, Caroline.
You're welcome. And for my listeners, until next week, may the sun kiss your face, may the waters bless your body, and may all nature sing in your presence.